Lights are still on.
We need a little more solar on this building.
It's the northwest wind, you know, it comes right through the window.
Yeah.
We haven't paid district energy this month.
January will be over
Not
soon.
Enough wood chips. I sign when you turn it on, if you would. Yeah, that's all right. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We're going to move the agenda around just a little bit because we're waiting for some copies of the Legislative Auditor's Report. So we'll start with the end of the agenda with the DNR report on the Game and Fish Fund. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members. I'm Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources. With me is Pete Square, the Administrative Services Section Chief for the Division of Fish and Wildlife. We wanted to go through two reports with the committee today, and I don't know, Madam Chair, how much time you want to spend on these, but we thought we would just quickly go through the large report that I think all of you have in front of you. It's the Game and Fish Fund annual report. These reports, just a little bit of history, have been produced since since 1993. Some of you may recall Senator Merriam back in the early 1990s did a couple of things in 1993 and 1994, actually, that relate to this report and the next report that we're going to talk about, which is the allocation of game and fish between fisheries and wildlife. But in 1993, there was a requirement that each year the department produce a report on expenditures and revenues to the Game and Fish Fund. So this report has been produced every year since then, and it's sent to the finance chairs in both houses every year. In 1994, there was additional statute that created citizen oversight committees, budgetary oversight committees for the Game and Fish Fund. To review the expenditures in the entire Game and Fish Fund and also in all the dedicated accounts. The Game and Fish Fund consists of primarily license revenue from hunting and fishing licenses, plus federal reimbursements of excise taxes on hunting and fishing equipment. And then there are a number of dedicated accounts in the fund that are primarily stamp or surcharge accounts, things like trout and salmon stamp, duck stamp, pheasant stamp, that have money that's for specific purposes. So this report, like I said, is produced annually, and it's reviewed annually by subcommittees for each of those dedicated accounts and by the overall Game and Fish Citizens Oversight Committee. A year or so ago, the Citizens Oversight Committee was expanded to include two legislators, one from the House, one from the Senate. So Senator Chaudhry is the Senate's representative on the Game and Fish Fund Budgetary Oversight Committee. Since this is a report that's produced each year and that is transmitted to the legislature each year, we didn't think we'd spend a lot of time on it, but I can just walk you through what's in it. And if there are questions from the committee, we can talk about those. But
that sounds good. Just a brief kind of overview.
Okay, we'll try to breeze through this one and spend more time on the imbalance, Madam Chair.
Sounds good.
So this report fulfills a statutory requirement. It describes, if you look in the early pages that are the small Roman numeral pages, if you go to pages Roman numerals 4 and 5, you can see recent years' receipts and transfers into the Game and Fish Fund and expenditures and transfers out, and you can see it's approximately a $90 million a year fund. It is a separate fund in the state treasury. Then the rest of this report is just more of a breakdown of expenditures by the types of accounts. The operations is the kind of the undedicated account portion of the Game and Fish Fund. All the dedicated accounts, deer and bear, deer management, are portions of the deer and bear licenses that are dedicated, duck stamp, trout stamp, pheasant stamp, and so forth. And then you get into the actual first page of the report is starting out with fisheries expenditures, and there's a very detailed breakdown starting out with overall expenditures, and then by specific categories of activities. There's some trends, like on page 7, you can see some trends of some of the outcomes. We try to tie measurable outcomes to all of the expenditures from the fund. This goes on then through the other various parts of the department. The Game and Fish Fund does not only fund the Fish and Wildlife Division in the department. A number of other divisions also receive part of their funding from the Game and Fish Fund. So after Fisheries and Wildlife, on page 29, we get into License Center. On page 35, Ecological Resources does some work with Game and Fish Fund money. Enforcement, a large amount of their work is Game and Fish Fund. Trails and Waterways with fishing piers and water accesses. Forestry a little bit on ecological classification system. I'm up to page 59 now, Madam Chair, on lands and minerals.
Fast.
I'm going pretty fast.
For the speed readers.
Lands and minerals does some of the acquisition and land survey work associated with Game and Fish type facilities. So it breaks down those expenditures, and then the back of the report after the operations support, starting on page 71, there's a brief summary of each dedicated account. So it starts out with on page 72, the deer bear management computerized licensing account, then the emergency deer feeding and wild servant health account. That wild servant health account is the account that we've been using for CWD and TB work primarily. Some summaries of some of that work that we've done. There's a deer management account on page 77, the waterfowl habitat improvement account. So each of the dedicated accounts is also detailed in terms of the money that came in and the general expenditures that went out. And at the very end of the report, we have a fund statement for the Game and Fish Fund. This gets updated twice a year. So the most recent one was November of 2008. I'm sure there'll be more discussion of fund balances and forecasts as we get into the budget discussion. And then the very final page of this report kind of leads us into the next report, and that is Game and Fish Fund allocations to the hunting and fishing activities for fiscal year ended June 30th of 2008, and that is something that we're now doing annually, and that's what we wanted to spend the bulk of the time talking about, and it's the subject of this special report that was required by legislation of 2007 that was due to the legislature by November 15th of this past year, which we did complete and distribute, and we wanted to spend some time on. But before we jump into how the Game and Fish Fund revenues and expenditures are divided between hunting and fishing, maybe we'll just pause and see if you have any questions on this big report.
And let me just ask generally, I mean, just looking at the trends, they look kind of what we've seen. Well, the hunting licenses are just growing a tiny bit, and fishing is sort of wavering a little bit. What are you seeing any trends that are new and different? Are you seeing any changes already from, let's see, the laws we passed last year in licenses?
Madam Chair, you're correct that the trends for hunting and fishing in Minnesota are pretty stable. As a proportion of the population, we're losing the participation rate, but actual number of participants is staying fairly stable. We haven't really seen a trend from any of the recent legislation. We do know, just looking at the demographics of the licensed buyers, we know there's a large bulge of the baby boom generation that each year is shifting a year older, and that we're not seeing in the younger age cohorts the replacements for them coming in at the rate that they would need to maintain that stable line into the future. So as the baby boom generation ages and is less able or inclined to participate, we could be seeing a drop in those actual participation numbers. We are doing a number of things with recruitment, retention. The legislature's helped do a number of those things with fees and special hunts and we're doing some marketing of lapsed anglers who didn't buy a license last year but bought one the year before. And so we're trying a variety of things. Some of those are showing some signs of effectiveness, and we could talk in more detail about those if you'd like, at some other time. But we are seeing, you know, some encouraging signs that we're able to, through some of those programs, reach more younger people and get them more involved in outdoor activities. So we think that's fertile ground for more work in the future.
Well, maybe just briefly, what's been working to get more kids involved?
Madam Chair, we have a number of special hunts, special seasons, reduced fee or free licenses or weekends. We've started a new mentoring program. You know, we can't show a direct relationship, but archery in the schools has been an extremely popular program. It's a program that boys and girls, really regardless of athletic ability, can participate in and have some sense of achievement. It's very popular, and we're seeing increased archery bow hunting license sales by some of the younger age classes. But there's a whole variety of things that we're trying, and it's hard to pin down any one of them. The other thing is marketing, some direct mail marketing to people who have purchased licenses in the past but for whatever reason didn't choose to buy them now. We're involved in a pilot with the National Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation on different kind of direct mail techniques to reach some of those people. So it's some different things that we haven't traditionally done. But some of them at least seem to be working. Whether they'll be able to work to an extent that will replace that baby boom cohort, we don't know yet.
Maybe we should put it in the grad standards or something. You got to learn to fish, you know? Wouldn't that be a Minnesota thing?
Oh, that would be.
Madam Chair, there's actually some discussion about outdoor recreation in the classroom.
Well, so. Yeah. You know, Senator Chavez talked about that. All right, Senator Dill, then Senator Saxhawk have questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Baugus, I've heard in the hallways out here that the private sector can produce fingerlings much cheaper than the DNR. Is there some information in this report that you're presenting that identifies the cost of producing fingerlings and other fish sizes for restocking, and what's your reaction to that information?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, there's we've calculated our cost of producing fingerlings for stocking, and we've been buying fingerlings from the private sector now for a number of years, and there are lower costs for the fish that we're buying from the private sector right now than what our costs have been. There's nothing specifically in this report that details that. In fact, we're just asking the management and analysis and development division of the Department of Administration, or whatever they're called now, to do an analysis of what our actual costs are. We've got the raw numbers for what we calculate in a year it costs us, and we know what we pay, but it doesn't necessarily take everything into account to be an apples to apples comparison. So, you know, at least at some scale, there is a savings for purchasing those private fish under the current analysis, but we are kind of fast-tracking a more detailed outside analysis of the total cost there, and we'll have more information. We're hearing the same thing that you're hearing in the hallway, and so we're trying to get an outside analysis done as soon as we can for discussion as we go through the budgeting process.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Baugus, over the past decade, we've had some pretty good deer hunting based on a deer population that's been relatively healthy. And we have the buck license, you know. You can take as many as three deer, more than that, actually. My question is, as we look on these figures here, does that reflect, particularly in the case of deer hunting licenses, a substantial increase? And are we afraid that given this year's harvest and the fact that we may have a rough spring, that we could anticipate that there's going to be a considerable decrease in the license fees?
Mr. Baugus?
Madam Chair and Senator Saxhog, we have enjoyed very good deer hunting, and you're correct, it was down this past year about 15%. It was still the eighth highest ever, so it wasn't terrible, but it was a lot worse than people were used to. And actually, I think a number of you may recall a year ago we were here talking about simplifying the deer regulations and the all-season license versus just letting people buy whichever license they wanted. And I know Senator Bach, you know, was basically the author of the all-season license. And we realized that by that simplification and just letting people buy a license for the season that they wanted to hunt, that we would lose revenue. And we did lose revenue even this last year as a result of that. We don't have an exact calculation yet, but with the all-season license, it was a very popular license, but most people who bought it only hunted two of the three seasons, but they paid for three seasons. So it was generating a lot of money, and we've lost some of that. Whether we'll see a decline in deer license sales, you know, I think it's probably we aren't through the winter yet. We don't know how it's going to turn out. The deer are okay now, but they may not be by April. But even if it's an okay winter for the deer, we're probably going to see more restrictions, maybe fewer intensive, the five deer areas, and more lottery where you can only shoot one. So that could further depress sales somewhat, although deer hunters are pretty loyal to deer hunting, and if it's open, they usually will go.
Thank you.
Mr. Bogus, what about the conservation angling license? Have you had enough time to see how many people are buying those yet?
Madam Chair, that one actually doesn't take an effective date until the new license year, which starts March 1st, so it's a little early yet to know. We projected that a lot of people would buy that, and it would result in a reduced revenue of the Game and Fish Fund, but, you know, we won't know that for sure until probably a year from now.
The graph that you've got on Roman numeral page 8 shows the long-term projection for the Game and Fish Fund going into the negative numbers after 2012. But that's based on projections. That's right at the beginning in the first introduction, graph number 3. That's based on those policy changes primarily?
Madam Chair, it's based on projecting revenues based on some of those policy changes that we just talked about, the simplification of deer licensing and the conservation license. Both are projected to have a resulting decline in revenue, and it's projecting current levels of expenditure out. So obviously it can't go into the red, so at some point something's going to have to give either on the revenue or the expenditure side, but it's our best estimates of what the future revenues are going to be, including the federal revenues that we get from excise taxes and so forth. So these can change somewhat, particularly that federal revenue, because that's divided amongst all the states and it goes up and down. But that's our best projection right now. This will get updated in February.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Last year I bought a non-resident South Dakota license, and about a month ago I got an email from South Dakota DNR asking me to renew, but I've never gotten a similar email from Minnesota DNR asking me to renew. Is the DNR going to be doing that soon?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, it is something that we're talking about, is trying to capture email addresses of our customers, so to speak. We don't really have a systematic way of doing that right now, but it is a very cost-effective way of contacting people. Right now we have their mailing address, but that's a very expensive way to contact people. So it's something that we're looking into, but that we don't routinely capture right now.
Another question, Madam Chair.
Chaudhry.
What is the DNR doing to promote the conservation angling license to people who wouldn't normally buy a license?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we're certainly going to have, a large section on that in the new regulations booklet that will be coming out soon. And when it becomes available, I'm sure we'll be doing press releases and point-of-sale
Madam Chair, Mr. Boggs, that doesn't reach people who wouldn't normally buy a license. People get the regulations when they actually buy it. So what are you doing to promote the conservation angling license and it's lower price to people who wouldn't normally buy a license at the normal price, the regular price.
Madam Chair and Senator Schauder, I think that would be primarily through information in press releases and on the website.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, when will that promotion start, and how will you be doing it? Which people in Minnesota will you be targeting it to?
Madam Chair and Senator Schauder, I think our assumption is that anyone that would buy a conservation license is someone who would ordinarily fish. So we think that that would reach that target audience.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, I'm asking, how are you promoting the conservation license to people who would not normally buy a fishing license as a cheaper means to go out fishing?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I don't know of any plans beyond press releases and point of sale and website.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, it's no wonder you're first seeing a reduction in revenue, because you're selling a cheaper option to the people who would already buy something. The opportunity you have is to increase license revenue, cheaper price, to people who wouldn't normally buy it. These are the people who don't fish. These are the people we're trying to recruit. And that was the discussion we had when we were passing this new opportunity. And I think we're passing up a great recruitment tool by reducing the fishing license price to people who wouldn't normally buy it. The discussion was how this could assist a lot of people, and single moms, big brothers, big sisters, uncles, who could could take advantage of a new discount where they might not normally in the first place. And so if we're concerned about license revenue going down, then it seems to me the opportunity you have is to take this license and promote more sales. And these people, that can then become a gateway to people buying the regular license. So I don't understand why it's been almost a year since we passed this conservation license, and no plans have been made to promote it.
Senator Chaudhry, maybe we should create a marketing plan and fund that out of this fund. A very small amount.
Yeah.
Well, might go a long ways.
Maybe, Madam Chair,
but I think it to some atypical populations that aren't really hearing the message otherwise.
I think you're right that
we're going to miss people otherwise. The point is to really broaden the net.
That's a good idea, but I think we also have a reasonable expectation that the executive branch will execute the law. Especially when we're talking about, recruiting new people and the baby boomer class getting older and older, there's going to be a drop-off. I don't understand why this new conservation license wouldn't have been incorporated into any of your plans in the last 9 months.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we are working with a lot of those communities, and I'm not certain that it hasn't been. Well, you certainly make a valid point, and we'll look into it and get back to you with what our plans are.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, I recently bought a different vehicle. Two of our vehicles have the deer habitat plate on, and I was hoping on this our third vehicle to have the fish habitat plate. I was informed by the licensing center that is not available yet. And I thought I'd seen media that it was about to be released. What is the status of the fishing plate?
Mr. Bogus.
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, that's a really good question.
Do you have them on
and,
your track?
And we, committee may recall that when that plate was announced, we had some negotiations with the original artist because it was a leaping walleye initially, and so we went back and revised the artwork with the consent of the artist to make it a little more typical of a fish that would leap out of the water, the design we didn't feel ever really worked. So we've been working on actually a series of designs and negotiating with Department of Public Safety, and our goal would be to not only offer a fish plate but offer several designs. I wish I could tell you how soon that could happen, but we're still working on it. We have been actively working on it, though, I can tell you that.
Well, I hope you'll be the first to know, Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Boggs, about how many habitat plates are there?
Designs, you mean?
No,
designs?
Not there's just two designs.
Total
I'm
numbers.
Just curious how many have been sold.
How many are we selling? That's the question. Madam Chair and Senator Frederickson, I'd have to get back to you on that, but I know it's they're the most popular plates that are sold, and they're bringing in over $3 million a year, and it's $30 a year, contribution to the critical habitat account to have those plates. So they are, what is that, 90,000, 100,000? I'd have to get back to you on the specific.
Madam Chair, Mr. Boggs, I'll wait till the budget hearings when your budget is for us. I'll find out then.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Senator Frederickson, I can get you a supporter license, troop license plate like tomorrow.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, we have three vehicles and we have habitat plates in all three. And I'll also tell you.
I one of mine, but I got a soldier one on the other one.
I'll also tell you that I did not pay just the minimum for them either.
Good for you. All right, thanks. Why don't we move on to the other report?
Okay. The second report is the one that was required by laws of 2007. I know Senator Chaudhry and others worked on this requirement. You'll see the actual law on page 2 of the report that Commissioner, in consultation with the Budgetary Oversight Committee that we talked about earlier, shall prepare this report that summarizes expenditures and imbalances between hunting and fishing related activities, including allocation of game and fish fund receipts and expenditures for fiscal years 89 to 2007 and projected receipts for fiscal years 2008 2009, recommendations for short term and long term changes. So, just I won't go into a lot of the detail on this either and leave it for questions, but just as a little bit of background, this issue first surfaced in the mid-90s. The Game and Fish Fund, as we were just talking, is mostly license revenue from hunting and fishing licenses and federal excise taxes that are reimbursed to the state from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And the Game and Fish Fund has always consisted of both hunting and fishing revenue in one fund. And it's never been managed as a game fund and a fish fund. But in the mid-90s, questions began to be raised and kind of came to a head in the mid-90s. And in 95, 96, and 96, 97, we had back-to-back severe winters. We had very acrimonious debates about feeding deer, some of them in this very room. And the decision was made in one of those years to feed deer, but at that time there was concern that that wildlife was using fisheries revenue to feed deer, so the decision of the legislature was to create a deer feeding account, which later became the deer feeding and cervid health account, but to loan the money for the deer feeding so that fishing licenses wouldn't subsidize deer feeding. And then that led to a desire by the Citizens Oversight Committee to really look into how was the revenue coming in and how were the expenditures going out, because it was more of a feeling that people had during those deer feeding debates, and no one had ever really looked at it. So a couple of years later, there was a preliminary analysis that our division did with the Budget Oversight Committee, looking at expenditures and revenues just within our division. And the law wanted us to go back to 1989. We couldn't do a consistent analysis that far back, so we've got some information in here that you'll see on page 4 that was based on that preliminary analysis of revenues and expenditures from the FY 88-89 biennium through the 98-99 biennium. So that was a preliminary look at this question of how much revenue is generated by fisheries and how much is generated by hunting, and what are the relative expenditures. But that only looked at one division in the department. That was the Division of Fish and Wildlife. Starting after that in and maybe I'll just talk about briefly on page 4 that you can see fisheries management over the period from FY 88 to 89, and this is just the section of fisheries in the Division of Fish and Wildlife, was expending about 48% to 63%. It was gradually increasing over that 10-year period or 12-year period. The wildlife section was 51% to 45% or 43% in the low years. This didn't consider expenditures of game and fish for hunting enforcement, fishing enforcement, stream and lake habitat work in ecological resources, acquisition work in the Department of Lands and or Division of Lands and Minerals, or other things. So this was an incomplete analysis and really wasn't comprehensive. But that's the only information that we had going back historically, as was asked for in the law requiring this report. In the 2000s, the Citizens Oversight Committee asked to look at this in more detail. And at that point, they formed an ad hoc subcommittee just to look at this expenditure, revenue, and balance. Pete Squira worked with that committee to agree on a methodology to split out these types of expenditures and revenues throughout the department. I'm going to turn it over to Pete at this point to talk about the more recent comprehensive analysis that we did of the balance between hunting and fishing revenue and expenditure.
Great. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Pete Squira. I'm the Administrative Services Section Chief for the Division of Fish and Wildlife in the DNR. The Budget Oversight Committee appointed a three-person ad hoc committee made up of the Wildlife Operations Subcommittee Chair, the Fisheries Operations Subcommittee Chair, and the overall Budget Oversight Committee Chair. We sat down and agreed upon a set of number of assumptions. We looked at revenues, we looked at expenditures, and agreed upon these assumptions. They took a look at the first allocations, which were June of 2005, and that's what you see in the back of the Game and Fish Fund report, and you'll also see it throughout this report as well. Through Appendix A, they actually wrote a report that's on page 14 of this report. It's attached as Attachment A. This analysis that was agreed upon back in 2005 is updated with every fund forecast that we do and published once a year through the Game and Fish Fund report. The ad hoc committee, along with the department, agreed that a certain amount of factors go into the revenue expenditure analysis, and they're listed on page 5. Some of the major findings that were found as far as, I think we went back to fiscal year 2000-2001 biennium, and the degree of the differences between then and now can be found on Table 2, which is on Table 2, page 6. Thank you. And this same analysis will be shown on the back of the Game and Fish Fund statement. What it's shown is the actual expenditures for hunting and fishing for the entire department, as Mr. Boggess mentioned, not only for the Division of Fish and Wildlife, but for the other programs, including enforcement, lands and minerals, trails and waterways, and others. We made the assumptions on revenues for hunting and fishing, including the excise tax, and put them on the middle of the chart. And then, as a percentage, the hunting and fishing relationships between the expenditures and revenues. If you take a look at the right-hand side of the chart, we'll see that projected FY 08 and 09 percentages is that hunting is spending 94.5% of hunting-related expenditures based on their revenue. Conversely, fishing is 104%. So they're actually spending, the fishing-related expenditures are more than 104% of the revenues that are coming in. This is charted on page 7, the changes over time. And we basically have laid out a simple mathematical equation to put this in perspective on page 7. Wildlife-related expenditures over hunting-related revenues would be the percentage that we're looking at. Likewise, fishery-related expenditures over fishing-related revenues is the percentage of 104% at this time. We've also laid out four basic solutions based on this, on these ratios and these calculations. If you move to page 8, we've very succinctly put the options in making impacts to these ratios. Number one is simply we can increase wildlife-related expenditures out of the Game and Fish Fund, which I might add is our Game and Fish Fund only and not the dedicated accounts that we talk about, the set-asides for small game surcharge, the duck stamps, the turkey stamps. Those are not included in this analysis. The second option would be to decrease hunting-related revenues. Deer simplification was an example of this. The third one would be decrease fisheries-related expenditures. And then the fourth would be to increase fishery-related revenues in the form of a fee increase, in form of marketing, in form of new opportunities for anglers. Or we added a fifth one, which would be looking at our funding portfolios for managing wildlife and managing fisheries. We have other funds other than just the Game and Fish Fund, the General Fund, Heritage Enhancement, even larger than that, bonding funds, that we can take a look at in balancing and managing the needs of these programs. The Budget Oversight Committee formally took a stance on this. It's attached as Appendix B. It's also on the bottom of page 8 in italics, so you can take a look at that. And that's also found on page 18. We also have documented some changes that have happened over time on page 9 since June of 2005. The first one is we've used this analysis in evaluating biennial budget packages that we put we move forward out of through the process. We've also looked at our funding portfolios for fish and wildlife programs. We've also something that is outside of our control is the excise tax, the federal excise tax. It has dramatically increased over this time, especially in the Dingell Johnson side, which is the fishery side. Some of the gas tax that goes into there has been increasing over time, and then other changes which are noted in the fourth bullet there, the elimination portable fish house licenses. The 14-month license fishing license actually affected fishing revenue slightly. Conservation angling license, the deer simplification, all of these legislative changes, although policy, will affect the revenues.
Mr. Squier, I was referring back to the first report. And on page V, it listed the revenues, and I was trying to reconcile those with these numbers that you have. And this, because it looked like hunting and fishing licenses were very similar in revenues in this report, and so that's what I'm trying to understand. This shows $23 million for hunting, $20 million for fishing licenses. So is it the federal dollars? Is that or what else are you counting in this number that you have in this very tiny print on page 6?
I apologize for the small print,
okay.
Madam Chair. It's
60. I mean, you have for the biennial number a big difference, fishing at $82 million revenues and hunting $68 million.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, what that includes is the fishing licenses themselves. Mm-hmm. It also includes the federal grants on the excise tax, the Dingell Johnson funds, which is a biennial total.
Okay.
It's also the other miscellaneous revenue that we've made assumptions on. For example, revenue off of leases on the land. We've made some assumptions on what percentage of that is wildlife-related versus what is fisheries-related.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just to maybe expand on that a little bit, on that table one on page V, it, you know, besides just those license revenues, practically everything else in that list is included and either attributed to hunting or fishing, except for the lottery in lieu of sales tax or the heritage enhancement account, the transfer in of police state aid might be one or two others, but other than that, everything in that whole list gets attributed to either hunting or fishing so that we could do this analysis.
Madam Chair, one other distinguishing feature of these numbers, the table in the book on page B is all funds in all accounts, all surcharges, all stamps. The numbers in the report are simply the funds that are put into the Game and Fish Fund Operations Fund.
Okay. All right. Are there questions? Is that the end of your presentation on this?
Mr. Boggess is going to talk about the rest of the report.
Madam Chair and members, I just wanted to talk a little bit about recommendations. Starting on page 9, we were asked to give some short-term and long-term recommendations, and so we've identified some strategies that we think should be considered by policymakers, both in legislature and in the department. One is to continue to use these ratios as a factor when we're determining funding priorities with existing funding, taking advantage of new funding opportunities, or I suppose budget cutting opportunities to close the gap when appropriate, considering fee increases and license fee structures as they relate to this imbalance. And then a very specific one relates to what I talked about earlier in terms of the history of how we got to where we're talking about this, and that is to forgive the debt to the Game and Fish Fund from the Wild Service health and feeding account that was borrowed to do the deer feeding. That's a small amount of money compared to the difference that we're talking about now, but it seems that the impressions of that time, if they were true, have since flipped pretty widely the other direction. We don't think it makes sense any longer for that repayment to be required. Longer term, we're saying this type of analysis should continue to be done, and we noted earlier it's being done annually in this larger annual report. That the Budget Oversight Committee should discuss this annually, and the legislature should also consider it in budget and funding discussions. That the funding portfolio should be evaluated, and this relates to the little pie charts on page 11, where you can see fisheries management on the left is very heavily funded out of Game and Fish funds, with some heritage enhancement, which is also technically in the Game and Fish Fund, and very small slices of the pie for all other sources of funding, whereas the wildlife management function has a much broader portfolio of funding sources, including a lot of dedicated accounts, more bonding, more REM, and more general fund, at least in this analysis. So that's another way to look at this. To maintain an adequate balance in the Game and Fish Fund so that it does not go into the red. And those are the basic strategies. And then finally, just something that as we were looking at this, we think it's important for you to consider is that there's never going to be a perfect balance between hunting and fishing in this account. It's always been a game and fish account, and we think it should continue to be a game and fish account. In reality, not everything can be divided as neatly as what this analysis suggests, because there are some things that we do for wildlife that benefit fisheries and some things we do for fisheries that benefit wildlife. So we just think that we need to continue to keep this issue on the forefront and to monitor it and to achieve a balance over time that's acceptable to those whose fees we're using for these purposes. And that's where we think we've gotten out of that balance, and we've heard that from the Budget Oversight Committee, that I don't think anybody expects that it should be exact, but they think it's gotten too far out of balance. So that's it.
All right. Thank you. Other comments, questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So in the DNR's proposed biennial budget, what is the DNR going to propose in terms of realignment of programs, whether reducing, increasing, or maintaining them? And what reevaluation is it doing in terms of these funds based on the fund and integrity and allocations?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we do obviously have a number of proposals in the governor's budget that's being announced probably as we speak. that address programs and fund integrity in this. We do not have a proposal that brings these into balance, and part of the reason for that is that we think that's a discussion that we need to have with the legislature because, you know, this issue has been before us for some time. Actually, this biennium that we're in, the way the money's been appropriated, the gap is widening again, and we think we need to have the discussion as to, you know, is this, should this be the driving factor in what we do in fish and wildlife conservation, this balance? So part of this is still an open question for all of us to figure out.
Madam Chair,
Senator Chaudhry.
Now I'm very confused. As the statute required the DNR to propose recommendations for short-term changes to correct the imbalance, and then recommendations for long-term changes that will ensure, et cetera, et cetera. And then the DNR has listed recommendations, but then you're saying that the DNR doesn't have a proposal. I don't understand that.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, I'm saying we don't have a proposed budget that will bring these into balance. That's correct.
Okay. But you were asked to make recommendations to do that by law.
Yes.
So why isn't the DNR doing that?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we have made recommendations. They're in this report.
But you just said that you're not giving us recommendations.
They're giving us recommendations. They're just not following the recommendations. I think that's what we're hearing, that they're not
incorporating. Madam Chair, that's basically it, is that this is a difficult challenge. We've been all trying to work on it for a number of years, and we do not have a proposed fix in our proposed budget. We have some recommendations on ways that it could be fixed, but we're not sure exactly how to do it ourselves.
Well, I guess it's up to us again, Senator Chaudhry, to take action on this.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Chaudhry.
Mr. Bogus, what fishing fee increases and license structure modifications is the DNR proposing?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, we're not proposing any at this time.
Are you speaking? I'm sorry, just to interrupt, but are you speaking in reference to the governor's budget proposal? Okay.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, I guess
Senator Chaudhry.
Okay, what fishing fee and license structure modifications does the DNR recommend to fix the short-term strategies? The fishing fee increase and license structure modification is part of your recommendation. So what amount of fee increase and license structure modification does the DNR recommend?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we've run through a variety of scenarios, including looking at some of the economic models of whenever you raise a fee, you see a decline in participation, at least temporarily, and it takes it a while to come back. So we've looked at a number of scenarios. We're not recommending one right now, but we certainly could provide that information on what it would take in different types of options on resident fees, non-resident fees, different types of licenses, different structuring of licenses. We could have that discussion.
I don't understand at all, Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, that the DNR was required to provide recommendations on how to balance the Game and Fish Fund. The DNR has made recommendations on how to balance the fish fund. All I'm asking for is, what exactly do we do with these recommendations? Are these recommendations or aren't they?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, they are recommendations on different options that could be used to fix this. We don't have a specific recommendation on how to fix it. There are a number of ways it could be done.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, I don't recall that from the statute or the session law. I'm not seeing where it says that there need to be recommendations on for the legislature to consider various options. I'm seeing that it just said it's asking for or requiring recommendations for short-term changes to correct any imbalances.
Senator Chaudhry, I think you've made your point, and they've made recommendations, and they're not doing anything about it. And so if we want action, we're going to have to take it ourselves in our budget. So I think we've established that. Wow. And there's also the Budget Oversight Committee has recommendations that are a little more specific, perhaps, and maybe we could take those up as well. But
I mean, Madam Chair, I think we deserve to know why the department doesn't follow the law. And not only that, but why we have a Budget Oversight Committee that in 2006 said the DNR must recommend fishing license increases. And they haven't done that either. Why do we have a legislature? Why do we have a Budget Oversight Committee? Why do we have law if it's not going to be executed? I think it's a worthy question to ask.
Put it in our budget and make it happen. It's not going to happen, apparently. So, Senator Bach.
Pass, Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
I'll pass.
All right. No, I think the point's been made. Other comments, questions? All right. Thank you. Oh, Senator Choice Ray.
Madam Chair, I have a question related to the impact on fishing revenues in terms of how we map out or how we know about the waters that are impaired, that people can no longer go fishing and take the fish, if DNR kind of tracks that and if we have a way of matching these two issues, meaning that I think there is an issue with trying to promote fishing and trying to have a campaign, but on the other hand, if people don't have places to go to that are fun and can no longer catch a fish because these are impaired waters, I wonder if we have a way of knowing that and really getting that information to this committee, because it's kind of a catch-22. If we don't have the money to invest in cleaning waters, and then we don't have the revenue to do that investment, we need to figure out how that works. And I wonder if the department collects that information and if that can be coming to us.
Mr. Bagas?
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Reid, we do work with Pollution Control Agency and Department of Health on impaired waters and contaminants, issues in fish, and consumption advisories, and we have information on the consumption advisories, at least linked on our website for anglers. The impaired waters, some of those are still fishable. Also, we're working on fish communities in some of these waters are actually some of the first indicators of impairment, changes in fish communities. So obviously, the condition of the water is critical to healthy fish populations. So we are very much engaged in that issue and, trying to work on ways that we can cooperate with clean water initiatives to also improve habitat for fish. We don't, that I can think of right now, have anything in the fishing information that indicates whether a water body has been classified as an impaired water or not, but just the fact that it's an impaired water doesn't mean it's not a fishable. It may not be as good of fishing, or the species composition of that water body likely will have changed, but it's not necessarily a water body that's not fishable. So we haven't provided that link, if I understood your question correctly.
Well, if it's impaired for mercury, then it's going to show up in the fish, and
yes.
That's...
And we do have the consumption advisory.
Will show up on the consumption advisory, right. And do you have those posted? I mean, do you have a list of those based on lakes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
sure, yes.
So it's not just a general statewide advisory on it, right? So it's...
Right.
So it would be interesting to know if that's if that's deterring some people from fishing, depending on where this is. But it's not like it's posted on the side of a lake or a dock when you go there. It doesn't say there's a mercury advisory on the fish in this lake, as far as I know. I've never seen
that.
All right. Thank you all very much. We appreciate it. And as we move forward with the detailed budget discussions, we'll have to get into this. You know, any corrective action that we think is necessary, we got to take action on. We have the legislative auditor's report, and I think we're ready now. But I think I'd like to briefly just bring up my bill for discussion, if I could. I just want to make sure while we have everyone here. Senate File 119. And do we all have this? It should be in your folders. And let me just explain it. I had, because I wanted to see if there was testimony on this. And this, just by way of introduction, I'm just going to explain it. I'm not going to present the bill today for a vote. I just wanted to make members aware of it and to find out if there was any strong feelings of pro and con on this bill before we move forward, because this is a bill that's been requested by the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council, and which I'm a member of, and they had requested that we pass this bill as quickly as possible to provide funding for staffing for the Heritage Council. And so let me just explain it. What it will do is essentially borrow money from the Game and Fish Fund to the amount of $150,000 is what the bill says. And the law would, if we pass this law into law, it would say that when the first sales tax revenue starts to come in, which will be first collected in August of 2009, that this would be paying back this loan to the Game and Fish Fund would be the very first expenditure out of that sales tax revenue, that portion of the revenue that goes to the Habitat Fund, the one-third. And so it's a, it would be a small amount of money out of that, what is it, $80 million projected or so to come in starting in fiscal year 2010, starting next summer. The Heritage Council feels really strongly that they would like to hire staff, a staff person, to help them do the allocation process. And as you'll recall, in the bill that we passed last year in the Senate that became law, the Heritage Council is supposed to make recommendations back to the legislature by April 1st for expenditure from that Habitat portion of the constitutional amendment funds. And so it's a pretty big job to get that done in by April 1st. And the law also required that the DNR provide staffing and support for the council, at least until other, you know, other arrangements were made. And so Bill Becker of the DNR has been assigned to staff the council. He's been doing a great job and working really, really hard. But, you know, he has another kind of full-time position at the DNR. So he's not asking for this to change, but the council feels very strongly, as I said, that they want to be able to hire a staff person outside of the DNR, outside of the LCCMR, just an independent person who would be assigned to support the work of the Heritage Council, which will be, you know, to on a regular basis every year to recommend expenditures for this fund. We have members of the Heritage Council. As you'll remember, they were there's legislators on it as well as citizen members appointed by the House, the Senate, and the governor. And they're already traveling to St. Paul for meetings and expending their own dollars for those expenses that they haven't gotten paid back for because there's no funding. And there won't once the sales tax starts getting collected in August, there will be funding available, constitutionally protected funding. So this would be just a stopgap measure to get through the next 6 months or 8 months or whatever it is. So I hadn't really, you know, the Heritage Council had proposed this. Representative Hansen got this bill drafted, and we introduced it in an effort, as I said, to try to fast-track it, because if we're going to hire somebody before in time to make a difference, it needs to happen quickly. I hadn't had much opportunity to ask interested members of the public or stakeholders about how they felt about this, so that's what I was hoping we could get some brief testimony today. And I know the deer hunters are here. Lance Ness, I think, had asked to testify as well, and we'll see if there's anyone else. Briefly, just to give us any comments to see if there's strong feelings for or against this. I should also mention that the Heritage Council met yesterday and voted unanimously to support this bill moving forward. So there is strong support on the council to do this. So why don't we bring folks up? Kevin Oslin is here from the Deer Hunters, Lance Ness, and I don't know if there's anyone else who would like to testify briefly. Let us know your thoughts on this bill. Barry? Tilly? Oh, no, you're just walking by. Okay, you're an innocent bystander. All right, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Fledged Alliance, and we strongly support the bill. We urge that you pass this quickly, as the LSARD Council needs staff. You might want to check with your own staff here. We do believe there's a little conflict of interest with the administration being covered by the Department of Natural Resources at this point and not being staffed independently. So we'd like to get that kind of cleared up. We don't want to have any trouble, any bumps in the road as the LSARD Outdoor Heritage Council proceeds. I worked with Rick Hansen to help get this drafted, and so we had talked about this actually last November after the election. We were talking about how we're going to get this thing funded. So we didn't know exactly where to borrow the money from. Rick picked the Game and Fish Fund as a source of that. I was kind of expecting the general fund myself, but that's up for you folks to decide, not for us. But we do think, again, expediency is the word here, and we wish this would be passed promptly and basically untouched as well, as it's just a single expenditure for this particular council.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Ness. Are there questions? All right. Thanks for being here. Mr. Oslin.
Okay. My name is Kevin Oslin. I'm regional coordinator with Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I want to thank you for valuing my input here on behalf of the deer hunters. I discussed this with our executive director, and Mark Johnson, and he feels, as I do, and we believe the board of the Deer Hunters Association, that this is a wise course of action. The sooner we get to a distancing between the DNR and the actual administration of this, I think the better. We understand there's growing pains on this. This is a new council, and there has to be those steps put in place legislatively, and the money actually has to flow to make this a really smooth transition to a formalized council or administration of the council. So we would just ask that as soon as the money flows, that money be reimbursed as soon as possible I guess the DNR now is absorbing that cost for the administration. And then ongoing, hopefully, whatever fund it's taken out of the Game and Fish would have minimal impact and could be reimbursed as soon as possible. But we are in favor of this type of arrangement to have that compensation for the administrative costs of the council.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Oslin? Great. Well, I really appreciate that. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this? And I should mention, we will bring it back for an actual vote, and I'm hoping to do that on Thursday. So thanks a lot for your testimony. Go ahead. Senator Vickerman.
Can some of us on this membership come up with another idea?
Why not? You have a better idea?
Well, we got all kinds of staff in both the House and Senate. Why couldn't we use that? This is going to turn into a jobs bill, just like one that got defeated last Friday, and I had a sore feeling about that. I'm all for this.
Well, I think I think Lance touched on this, that Representative Hansen and I, if we do move this bill forward quickly, we want it to be we want it to be a consensus bill, and if there's a lot of controversy or there's amendments, forget about it. I'm not interested in that because we don't need to have a debate about unrelated issues. This bill should just move forward just for this one narrow purpose. Otherwise, it should just stay on the same timeline as the rest of the budget and the rest of our bills and the rest of the legacy funds. So I'm hopeful that that's why I wanted to put it on the agenda now, just to get the word out that we're discussing this and give some time for people to see it and react to it. We need to talk to our leadership and make sure that they're on board with that. But it's just for a narrow purpose of just, getting a staffer on board or one staff and one administrative supporter or something like that. Senator Chaudhry?
Madam Chair, it sounds like it's more like bridge funding.
Yes.
Philip a gap in the funding more than anything.
Exactly.
Question I had is, do we need to clarify that the $150,000 from the to be paid back from the Outdoor Heritage Fund will come out of the 1% that they are allocated for administrative costs, so that it's not affecting projects? Does that need to be clarified, or was that not your intent?
Well, I think it certainly would be my intent that that's, you know, that that's what the money, that's what that 1% is intended for staffing purposes, right, or expenses. And, in fact, Mr. Knopf does have an amendment that, has that been passed out? Maybe we should just pass that around. It doesn't mention the 1%, but it just clarifies a little bit on the language that it's for compensation and expense reimbursement. Thank you. And we could add that. I think that's a good suggestion, because I think that's everybody's intent. And you're right, it's just bridge funding, and that in the future. Is that what you had in mind? Is that why you're smiling?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Ness? Madam Chairman, we were just that was going to be my point to make, is that there is an administrative fund within the Oversight Committee, and that's where this money should come. And mm-hmm. that's why I was kind of asking for a little clarification there. And Senator Chaudhry hit it right, the nail right in the head there, that money is set aside already, and there is money specifically for administration of the LOHC, and that's where this money should come from, and not from the general project money as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I think, I mean, again, we want to honor the intent of the legislature in passing it, and certainly of the voters as well, by having, you know, we have those limits to administrative costs, and we want to honor those. And this would come on in well under that.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be a problem. So we could maybe add that to our amendment for when we take action on the bill. I wasn't going to vote today just because we said on the agenda we wouldn't be taking a vote. So, Senator Vickerman?
Madam Chair, I'm just curious. This is 209. We're supposed to have some money come in 209.
Yes.
Why are we leaving this available until 2010?
I think...
there must be a reason. I'm just curious.
I don't know why.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, it's because the money won't be coming in from the sales tax until August at the earliest. And the question is when there will there be money available. This money, this just allows it to be carried over to the next fiscal year. We could have put October 31st on it. The issue here was just to put on the end of the next fiscal year so that the money could be, just so to make sure it could be carried forward after July 1st of 2009, because they are still going to need money then. They will not have money coming in from the Outdoor Heritage Fund at that point in time.
I think it's really, the language that's really important is that it has to be paid back to the Game and Fish Fund after July 1st of 2009, but before October 1st of 2009. And I think it's important to pass a law to say that. I should mention that Commissioner Holston has written a letter, which I've received, that says that he's already allocated $100,000 out of the Game and Fish Fund to cover expenses. But I think all of us are more comfortable having this be something that's done through a transparent process of the legislature passing a bill, hopefully, and doing it through the normal channels, so that we have a law that guarantees that this money will be repaid in a timely manner. I don't think we should move forward unless we have that guarantee, and that's why I think it makes sense to have this bill. And the other thing, one other thing is that we said in the statute that sets up the Heritage Council that it's a part of the legislative branch of government, so it makes sense for the legislative branch to do the hiring if there will be staff hired, and it could go, the LCC could oversee that process with this appropriation. They could provide some of that staffing support to help make that happen, so it would be really independent. So... We'll add that 1%, and we, you know, if you have a concern about the date, we can certainly adjust that. Okay.
I don't have a concern as long as I figured out what you were trying to do.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just wanted to, again, to see if there's any concern about moving forward on this, and if I don't hear any other negative feedback, we'll probably put this on the agenda for Thursday and go ahead and vote the bill. Hopefully out of the division and to the full finance committee. Yes, Mr. Ness.
Madam Chair, just one other comment I'd like to make on the previous issue that was before you about Game and Fish licenses, mm-hmm. and how, what to do about the shortfall and so forth. For years, again, this has gone on. It's always been kind of a seesaw battle between Game and Fish
Sometimes there's more fish money, license money, than there is game hunting money. One of the things that hasn't been looked at or has been looked at and that is always kind of brushed aside is indexing, where every so often the license would automatically be increased. The problem with that raises some other problems, and that's is whether or not there is an imbalance in the situation for other reasons. Maybe there's a bad winter and the deer herd is down, or the pheasants have been population is down, and therefore there's not enough sales to make that up. But that is one possibility you could look at, is actually indexing the licenses, and every so many years, you know, I make the index rate price increases for the game and fish licenses. The DNR doesn't get a half to come back and plead their case, and all the sportsmen don't get to line up and say, we need an increase in game and fish licenses. It can occur automatically. It helps your budget process move much smoother because you know there will be an automatic increase coming around in 2 to 4 years, whatever folks you set up. But I just wanted to offer that as a suggestion, the committee, that there is a way, there are ways to look at these imbalances. And so hopefully that will help maybe perhaps you folks in your deliberations over the Game and Fish Fund.
Great. Thank you for that input. That's helpful. Something for us to think about. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Appreciate your testimony. All right. Well, let's just lay that aside, and we'll stay tuned for more on that at our next meeting. Next, we'll bring up the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Thank you. There's some originals, aren't there?
Yeah, there's seven.
Oh, whatever. Might as well pass. Oh, it doesn't matter. Just pass out the copies. Yeah, we can save those. We're just passing out the copies, but why don't you go ahead and start? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Cecile Ferkel. I am the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division within the Legislative Auditor's Office. And while the reports are being passed out, let me just give you a little overview of what we do in the Financial Audit Division. We do spend a good amount of our resources auditing the state's financial statements. And that takes takes about half of our year. We also do audit work to ensure compliance with federal compliance by the state agencies that administer federal programs. That's the audit work that we're involved in right now. During the rest of our year, we do a review of the various state agencies under our jurisdiction. We have about 150 entities that we have audit responsibility for. And we look at the environments that they're operating in and select about 20 agencies that we go into then and conduct an internal control and compliance audit, looking at how well those agencies have designed their internal controls for their financial operations and how well they've complied with financially related legal provisions in statutes and then also in state policies and departmental policies. It was an internal control and compliance audit that we did at the Department of Natural Resources, but even a little more specialized than that, we were looking specifically at how the department monitored its revenues to ensure that dedicated revenues within the Game and Fish Fund and its dedicated accounts, how they made sure that those revenues were accounted for by their sources, and then how they made sure that the expenditures that were charged to those dedicated sources actually connected with the intended purpose or intended use of those funds. So where you've been just in the earlier in this meeting reviewing the expenditures of the Game and Fish Fund and within various accounts, what we've done is look beyond what the accounting system says was spent, and we looked at the detail of those expenditures to determine how the department assigned those costs to those dedicated funds. So we were looking very specifically at the source of game and fish funds and the uses of game and fish funds and how well the department's internal controls were designed to ensure that they complied with statutory limitations on the uses of those funds. I have with me Dave Policino, who will discuss the results of our audit.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is David Policino. I was the audit manager on the job. Our overall conclusions was that the report contains 17 audit findings of internal control weaknesses as well as noncompliance with legal requirements. In addition, we determined that the department did not resolve 3 of the 6 prior audit findings, and we repeated those issues in this audit report. Overall, our main concern is that the DNR did not accurately allocate revenues and expenditures to the Game and Fish Fund, and it not always documents their allocation methods. And what's important to review here is that although our focus was only on the Game and Fish Fund, well, when the divisions spend their money, they're spending from a myriad of sources of revenues, some general fund, federal fund, Game and Fish Fund, and possibly other dedicated funds such as the Natural Resource Funds. So if the Game and Fish Fund is either over or under allocated, that has a direct impact on the other accounts, especially the dedicated funds as well. So even though our focus was just Game and Fish, the impact is also on other dedicated funds as well. And this is particularly explained in the first finding on page 11, which deals with police state aid. Because of their enforcement officers, they receive proceeds from the police state aid, which is calculated by the Department of Revenue. This is aid based on the number of law enforcement officers or peace officers at the state as well as local levels. And the statute requires that the proceeds be deposited into the funds from which directly or originally paid those peace officer salaries. Now, what we found at the DNR was that they had not modified or reviewed their allocation since 2001, meaning that their assumptions for how their salaries were allocated has not changed in 8 years. This resulted in funds such as the General Fund and the Game and Fish Fund being over-allocated approximately $100,000 each of the last 2 years, while other funds such as the Water Recreation Fund and the All-Terrain Vehicles being undercharged or under-allocated approximately $100,000 as well, meaning that those funds did not have the money that they could have used for their own dedicated purposes as well. And what we're recommending is that the DNR annually review their payroll allocation to ensure that all the funds receive equally for the funds that they're entitled to for the police state aid. In addition to the revenue side of it, we also had some concerns about how they allocated some of their expenditures to the Game and Fish Fund. And the first example actually goes back to our special review that we issued this summer on the International Conference of the Enforcement Officers. In that report, we identified approximately $300,000 of inappropriate expenditures. The event occurred in July of 2007. And in June 2008, the department attempted to basically reimburse the Game and Fish Fund. They reimbursed them approximately $90,000 of costs incurred for that conference, which incurred both general fund as well as other dedicated funds. And our position is that because they were inappropriate expenditures, they're also inappropriate not only for the Game and Fish Fund, but other dedicated funds as well. And the full amount of the $300,000 should have been borne out of the general fund. It may not have been the best solution, but it's better to use the general fund money than it is other dedicated accounts, because it just seems to open more concerns. Another example deals with payroll. Payroll, which is arguably their largest expenditure, for the most part is allocated throughout the divisions based on various percentages. And what we found was that the divisions did not always have sound methods or documentation for how they allocated their payroll costs. For example, within the Enforcement Division, they allocated approximately $9 million each year to the Game and Fish Fund. And this is based on preliminary work assignments at the beginning of each year. However, they could not produce those records for us to review, so we had no way of knowing or verifying whether or not that was in fact the way the work for that year actually did occur. The final area for an example deals with their support services, which is their accounting, payroll, computer service activities. Prior to 2006, the department received appropriated funds to fund these operations. However, after that time, they wanted to make the dedicated funds or the divisions more accountable for their own operations, so they no longer funded directly the central services, but awarded that money to the divisions. The central services areas then billed these divisions for those costs. And we found no problems with the way the department calculated how much each division was to be billed. However, we did have a number of concerns with how the divisions then, in fact, repaid those central service costs. primarily because there was not always a sound logical method that how they allocated the cost back to the funds that actually earned or used those services. And in one case, one of the divisions really didn't allocate the cost at all. They just simply used whichever funds had a sufficient amount of money to pay those bills. And we think that the department needs to better work with the divisions so the divisions are consistently and logically finding ways to repay the bills that has a direct effect with the funds that incurred those costs.
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I know when we're talking about allocations of payroll and allocations of central services, it starts to not sound like important duties for the department. But what happens is that, you know, for example, a conservation officer in the course of a day or maybe even within the course of an hour may provide services that are a benefit to the Game and Fish Fund directly. Maybe they're general fund services. Maybe they're more specifically related to deer habitat. And the department, to be absolutely accurate, would have to find a way to capture what everybody is doing every day. Of course, that's not a reasonable approach. So they have to develop formulas that are, in the best case, would reasonably approximate what someone's duties are during the day so that those costs can be charged to the funds. And it was in comparing what would be a reasonable approximation or assessing that to the methods that we saw the department actually using. That's what we're taking exception to, that we did not feel that the department had a sound basis or consistent ways that they were allocating costs among these funds. So when you look at a report like the report that you saw earlier this afternoon on the Game and Fish Fund and you see payroll charges in the deer habitat area or the one of the other dedicated areas, you're going on what was charged by the department. We've looked behind that and said, well, what was your basis for making that charge? And that's where we're having questions, that we don't think the department has a good process for allocating those costs to those dedicated funds.
Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, Ms. Ferkel, perhaps a more general question about several of these items. Are there deficiencies because it was a failure of staff or inadequate staff size? Or because of system adequacies, not a good system for documenting the various charges and allocations?
Madam Chair, Senator, that would be a good question for the department, but my response is that we did not see consistent guidance centrally from the central DNR management that helped the divisions to understand what the basis should be, could be, or we also didn't see monitoring by the central office department to see how divisions were allocating those costs and then, you know, asking for some basis or justification. So we felt that it was more of a lack of direction and oversight by DNR management.
Madam Chair, Ms. Ferkel, is their computer system, their tracking system, is that adequate to get down to the level of information that you would like to see in their accounts?
Madam Chair and Senator, if we think of their payroll system, and if I respond in that respect, the payroll system has the ability to provide that kind of allocation. That, in fact, is much how they use it. But what we saw was some inconsistencies where an employee could charge specific time to specific accounts, but then the errors occurred when they took a day off, and then the system defaulted and maybe charged 50% to one account and 50% to another, even though that really didn't represent how the employee was spending their time. We did have one example of an employee that spent about 10% of their time, charged about 10% of their time to one of the dedicated accounts and 90% of their time to another one of the dedicated accounts. But when they took vacation, it was 50-50 between the two, and we felt that was an inappropriate charge.
Go ahead, please.
And the last area that we looked at dealt with some administrative expenditures over cell phones, travel, and purchase cards. And there again, we found that the controls were not adequate and they didn't always comply with the rules over those areas. And in one instance, we found that five people actually ended up with multiple purchase cards because they would change job duties within the department and there was no real good tracking way to ensure that they only still had just the one purchase card and did not return the other purchase cards as they should have. We'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, questions?
Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Ms. Ferkel, if I recall correctly, we do these compliance audits to assure that some federal funds and funds coming back to the state are properly allocated and handled, so we stay eligible for those funds. Does this audit comply with, or have the Department of Natural Resources in compliance with those requirements?
Madam Chair and Senator, we right now are at the department auditing their compliance with federal regulation and the use of their major federal programs. They do have two programs this year that elevate to the level of being a major federal program and subject to our audit. That means that they exceeded about $22 million. So we are in the midst of doing that. This report focused on game and fish funds, and I understand that federal funds are intertwined within those funds on the accounting system, but we are currently auditing to look specifically at the federal dollars and their compliance.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about a previous statement. Some of the language that is in here that you alluded to. I'm curious about the allocation portion. You said that in your findings, you see that there is some discrepancies in terms of how a salary is being paid to an employee that may have a distribution of a 50-50 from different accounts, but that, you know, when the person took some time off, it was different. And my understanding of your presentation is that somehow there was the employee had the authority to charge, and Is this a contractor or is an employee? Because I think that salaries of employees are determined by the division prior to the hiring. I don't think that employees actually charge for their salaries. I don't understand that statement.
Madam Chair and Senator, employees have, based on the authorization of the department, employees may have some ability to charge based on the actual hours they're working, not the amount that they're getting paid, but the hours that they're working. So if they spend 3 hours in the morning on one project, that might be paid from one funding source, and maybe the other 5 hours of the day are paid from another funding source. And sometimes employees have the discretion to report their work duties based on that kind of really detailed level. Sometimes, and maybe more often, though, employees are set up in the accounting system with a certain allocation that says over this year's time, we're going to pay 20% of your salary from this funding source and 30% from this funding source and 50% from this third funding source. An employee just reports their hours and it automatically distributes. And the example I was giving was kind of a combination of both, where we found an employee who was charging 10% of their time to one funding source and 90% to the other. But when they took a vacation day or a holiday, the system defaulted automatically to what was set up, so to a 50-50 split between the two sources. So it was kind of a combination of both of those.
Madam Chair, and I think I think that goes back to Senator Fredrickson's question with respect to this being kind of a personnel issue or a systemic issue. So if it is by default going into a charge, that's a systemic issue, mm-hmm. because it's not an employee actually determining at that point whether or not he or she should charge to one account or the other. It is the system directing that payment into mm-hmm. whatever account. So it's more a systemic than, I think, if I hear you correctly, is a systemic issue than it is a personnel issue, an individual issue.
Madam Chair and Senator,
Ms. Ferkel,
I believe that their system has the capability to provide them with an ability to control and monitor how their payroll is being charged. So I believe that was says Senator Fredrickson's question was, can their system do what we're asking? And I believe that it can. And yes, some of the problem is because of the way the defaults are set up and perhaps not reviewed at a later date or validated against actual work experience.
Thank you.
Senator Chavri.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a question on finding number two. Your report stated that the department made their reimbursement of $84,000 to the Game and Fish Fund for the Conservation Officers Conference from the General Fund and other dedicated non-game and fish funds. Are you saying that there is still some $215,000 still owing to the general fund, and then, excuse me, to the Game and Fish Fund? And then how did that break down between their reimbursement from general fund and dedicated non-game and fish funds? What were those dedicated non-game and fish funds and amounts?
Madam Chair and Senator, the cost of the conference, what they did at the point that they reimbursed the Game and Fish Fund, the $84,000, was allocated the total cost of the conference, which included the inappropriate costs. Not every cost related to the conference was inappropriate. So it included the $300,000 that we questioned. They allocated that across a kind of general distribution of their funds based on what value they believed the conference provided. So it was an allocation among the general fund. Some of the non-game ones, like the all-terrain vehicles and the water recreation fund, and then some of it did. The allocation ended up reducing the costs that had been paid initially by the Game and Fish Fund by $85,000. But not all of that $85,000 was questioned money necessarily. That was their share of the total cost of the conference, some of which was questioned.
So, Madam Chair, and how much more does the department need to reimburse the Game and Fish Fund?
Madam Chair and Senator, I believe the total cost of the conference was around $400,000. Yes. I think that that's a close figure. $300,000 of that was questioned. Initially, all of it was paid from the Game and Fish Fund. And I'm not doing too good with the math in my head here. So it may still be closer to the $300,000 figure. If they started with a total expense of $400,000 and reimbursed $85,000, they still have $300,000+ that was borne by the Game and Fish Fund. Okay. The department may be able to provide you with more accurate numbers than that.
But Madam Chair, the $85,000 they have reimbursed to the Game and Fish Fund came from the ATV account, the water rec account. Were those the only two?
I thought that there was one more.
Oh, general fund.
The general fund, but I thought that there was one more. I can get you the details on that. We do have documentation of that. I'm just not familiar enough with it, Senator.
Another question, Madam Chair, on finding number three. Page 13 of your report, it talks about the division. In the first bullet paragraph, the division used an electronic spreadsheet to determine allocation percentages and overwrote the prior year's calculations when determining the current year amounts. What does that mean? Does that mean they didn't just save the prior year's record and then move on to a new spreadsheet?
Madam Chair and Senator, that's right. They either did not save the prior year's calculations, or they didn't hit print and put it in a file, so that when we came in to see what the basis for their allocation was, there was no support.
Madam Chair, what was the response on why they did that?
Madam Chair and Senator, I believe they just didn't realize that it was necessary to keep it. I believe it was inadvertent, but not, they just didn't realize the value, I guess, of maintaining that documentation or the need for it for audit.
Senator Shedd, we can ask the DNR that.
We'll do that. Just the last question, what was your, Madam Chair, Ms. Ferkel or Mr. Pellicino, what was the general posture of the department in complying with your audit? Was it helpful? Did you have roadblocks in finding information? Did you have trouble interviewing people, et cetera?
Madam Chair and Senator, the department was cooperative with our auditor.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, both. We appreciate your time and your work on this. All right, let's hear from the DNR. Assistant Commissioner Larry Kramka is here. Welcome to the committee.
Excuse me. And I'm Chair Members. Larry Kramka, I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner at the moment for a short period of time. I have with me Jerry Hempel, who is the Assistant Chief Financial Officer at our Office of Management Budget, and he can answer some of the detailed questions you may have as well. And just to put a little bit of context on the report that you have in front of you, the department takes it, and the commissioner preaches that, you know, financial accountability, transparency of our operations is really critical. It's not just critical because it's required. It's also critical because the user groups that provide the funding for our agency need to know that we are using that funding appropriately and the way that you've directed us to within the budget. We appreciate what the Office of the Legislative Auditor does when they come in and take a look at our situation. We cooperate fully with them. We've provided open access, office space, everything to make it so that they can do their job. It's critical for us to learn from the things that they find. They come in from the outside to look at what we do when we're up close to it every day. They provide a different set of eyes and a different set of opportunities to examine what we do. And we appreciate that function. We think that it's critical for state government to have that function, as I'm sure you do as well. I do want to put into context a little bit the scope of the audit. Over the three-year period that this audit covered, we were in the process as an agency of quite a bit of improvement and development of different systems for our own internal audit purposes, and many of the things that come up in these findings have changed from the beginning of that period until now. Because of that, what you see is an audit that looks back retrospectively, but at the same time, many of the things that were actually found as findings in this audit report were already resolved at the time that it was published. We had found those things and already made those corrections. That includes everything from the police state aid discussion that you had earlier to the purchasing card issue. Three of the findings that were there from the previous audits that were restated here, because they were in that two-year crossover period, we just simply hadn't had enough time yet to catch up to those. They came back onto the table again because it was within the same time period that we were being notified of them prior to this.
excuse me.
Yep.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Kramka, have you resolved those issues to the satisfaction of the auditors now? Three you mentioned that were caught in this time period.
Madam Chair, members, I'd have to go and look at which ones we have partially done and which ones we've actually completely finished, and I don't remember if that is one of them.
Mr. Hempel, could you identify yourself to start, please?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jerry Hempel, Assistant Administrator of the Office of Management Budget in the Department of Natural Resources. Several of those have been resolved. Others are in the process. One of the ones that I can recall right now was the prompt deposit of more than $250 in revenue. We have, since the early part of the audit, since that time, we have negotiated some waivers as provided in the statute with the Department of Finance, where we're unable to, because of workload, that varies day to day, make those deposits within that time frame. And we have, based on these findings that came out now, we'll be amending those waivers to deal with some other specific issues that the audit brought forth. The compensating control was another one that was a previous finding. We had written a compensating control. Unfortunately, we weren't getting the compliance that we should have been obtaining. And we have changed our practice now. We have brought that as an issue that's brought up at every quarter's management team meeting with the commissioner and division directors to ensure that finding, that those controls are being implemented and actually being documented well. So we have addressed and completely resolved several of these issues. And I think there's possibly one that's still remaining of those that were prior issues. And we will have that one resolved by the end of this fiscal year.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair, members, I think that one of the other things that I just would point out is, as you know, the complexity of this agency's budget is unlike any other in state government. We have more activity codes than Health and Human Service does for the work that we do. The fact that there are findings here, given the complexity of our budget and the amount of change that we've been going through in those 3 years to try to be financially responsible, is not surprising. It is something that we take very seriously, and as you can see in our letter and response to the audit, we clearly identify what it is that we are going to be doing and by when into the future. By no means is there any reason for you to have the same set of findings back in front of you in another audit in the next year or the year after that. We are going to fix these and have already begun and finished many of them. The other thing that I would just close with and then allow whatever questions you would have of us is we believe that some of the innovations that we're making in these areas, specifically related to cell phones, the agency has a long history of cell phone use. We are a very distributed field organization. We have 1,100 employees scattered around the countryside that rely on cell phones not only for safety but to conduct their business out and about in the state. That started out in our agency with actual individual staff people able to not only get their own contracts and cell phones early on, to us eventually centralizing that into a statewide contract. And currently all of that has been a paper process. Literally stacks of paper come in to bill the state department for cell phone use. That had to be redistributed out to cell phone holders and managers across the organization to approve the very things that we're being asked to do here. And our response to that is that we are currently in the process of developing an actual electronically driven system that's very similar to the timesheet system that the state uses, where you will actually be able to, as a supervisor, pull up an individual employee's cell phone bill and approve it, see the actual calls that are on there, approve that online, and have that be very similar to the payroll system that is out there now. We believe that's a higher amount of accountability than what we've had in the past. We also believe it's an extremely innovative thing that no one else in state government is doing at the moment. We believe it will become a prototype for the rest of the agencies as well. So it's things like that that we are doing to try to manage and affect good, sound financial principles within our organization that we will continue to do into the future. I thank you for your time, and we, again, want to just reiterate that we appreciate the work that the Office of Legislative Auditor has done, and I would hold for any of your questions.
Thank you. Did you talk about how you're going to pay back the conference dollars?
No, I did not. Madam Chair, members, we As they indicated, we went back through when the original audit finding came in on the conference and assessed the activities that were both appropriate and inappropriate, and tried to apply not only logic as to what the different classes were and what they would be appropriate for an officer to use in their daily work. So looking back at the activities that they might use ICE safety for, and then charge the appropriate funds for that, such as snowmobile account, fishing account with ICE fishing, and that kind of thing. But then we also went in and tried to apply the very table that they mentioned on just the general allocation of salaries within the division, to try to go back to at least the basis for how we charge salaries at the time. We provided that information to the legislative auditor before we made those changes, and we applied those changes not hearing anything, not that they are required to tell us that they agreed with them or not. So the accounting, the accounts that you saw in the report today that have been subsequently charged, we will be going back in and actually determining across all of those funds how the $300,000 is distributed, and making sure that that money is refunded across all of the accounts, not just the game and fish, but any of those other places where the inappropriate spending would have been allocated.
Okay. So we'll be hearing more about this in the future.
We can certainly, Madam Chair, members, we can certainly provide you with that that information as that becomes available.
Yeah, we'd like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, other questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of your statements struck me, Mr. Lamka, that there would be no reason for any problems found in an audit to be found in a subsequent audit. That's what I thought I gathered. Last summer we had an audit, and it stated that the Game and Fish Fund was used inappropriately to fund the North American Wildlife Enforcement Officers Association's conference by $300,000. Now there is another audit that says you, the department, and that it should pay that back. Now we have another audit that says you have not. This was many months ago. It was widely reported. Very well known. Why hasn't it been paid back yet?
Madam Chair, members, what the previous audit suggested was it was $300,000 of inappropriate spending. There were several things that were laid out in that report, which included we should contact the AG's office to try to get reimbursement of some of those funds. But overall, we did not know that the general fund was any more appropriate for inappropriate spending than any of the other accounts that we have. So what we did, Senator Chaudhry, was to go back and look at if you take the staff time and the involvement of staff at the conference, how do you allocate that across the various accounts that those staff are normally paid from? We tried to fix it at least to the degree that we could document where those charges should have gone. The new audit finding really is not what we were told in the first one. We were not told that we needed to reimburse all of that money from the general fund.
And Chair, Mr. Lamka, I didn't ask you about the general fund. I said that the audit this summer said the DNR needed to reimburse the Game and Fish Fund by $300,000. Why hasn't that happened?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we tried to reimburse all of the accounts as appropriate under the circumstances. I'm not sure that we had direction on where to take that money from to reimburse the Game and Fish Fund. The Enforcement Division is funded across all of those accounts, not just the Game and Fish Fund. Some of the activities that were involved in the conference were directly related to game and fish activities.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Lampka, two audits have said that the DNR needs to reimburse the Game and Fish Fund by $300,000. Are you saying the DNR will not be doing that because it disagrees with that assertion?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, no, I believe what I just said earlier was we are working on identifying how to reimburse all of the dedicated funds that have now been charged, as we now learn in the new audit, according to the OLA inappropriately. So it will be the Game and Fish Fund, the Water Rec account, the snowmobile account, and any of those others that were charged in our what we thought was a corrected action.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Lampka, when will the Game and Fish Fund be reimbursed its $300,000?
Madam Chair, Senator, we will be doing that within this fiscal year. We are identifying right now what the plan is for how we identify those dollars and free that up so that we can do just that.
All right. Thank you. I think that's all the questions for now, and we'll certainly be revisiting this as well as we move through the budget discussions. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to comment or testify on this topic? Hearing none, we'll be adjourned until Thursday at our regular committee time. Meeting is adjourned.